cooperation over chaos. We are all in this together.
The Sustainable Hour.
For green, clean, sustainable Geelong. The Sustainable Hour.
Welcome to the Sustainable Hour. We'd like to acknowledge the broadcasting from the land of the Wathaurong people. We pay tribute to their elders, past, present, and those that earn that great honour in the future. We're broadcasting from stolen land, land that was never ceded. Always was and always will be First Nations land. While they were living the ways that they have for millennia, they developed an ancient wisdom, a wisdom that's based on nurturing both their land and their communities. And in there, in that wisdom, there is so much for us to use as we face up to the climate crisis.
If you have a dog, I bet there's been a moment where you and your dog looked into each other's eyes and felt that sense of connection. That feeling, the deep feeling that you understand one another. That there is this deep feeling of love and respect. And it's not something that needs to be spoken aloud. It's simply something you feel. There's a sense of security being expressed without words. And in fact, there's something we can learn from that. If you've experienced having a dog or a cat, then you know that it's deeply rooted within us, that a large part of what life is about is our relationships, knowing that we can rely on one another, we trust one another. And so there are the, you know, the familiar rituals. If you are Joey, which is the dog in my home, those rituals involve, for instance, going for a walk in the park, throwing a few balls, stopping by the rubbish bin because we've picked up some poo and also some plastic litter, things like that. And those regular rituals give life meaning. It feels good when we've done what we're meant to do. There's a deeper feeling underneath, which is all warm and loving, that feeling of belonging, of friendship, safety. I think there's probably many dog owners out there and cat owners and pet owners who relate to what I'm talking about here. And my point here really is that exactly the same thing applies to what we call nature out there, the life that surrounds us. Because nature really is just another word for all the life that surrounds us. There is a deep underlying love there. And as soon as we begin to sense it and be conscious about it, hearing it in the bird song, or feeling it, even in the way the plants emerge and grow, expressing the power of life itself, designed to be part of all these greater cycles, the familiar rituals, the carbon dioxide being breathed out, taken up again by the plants, breathed out by us and our dogs, all these different processes that create balance on this planet. And maybe it sounds strange, but I genuinely experience that when you zoom out from that love you feel for your dog or your cat or your pet in your home, and you extend that feeling to all the other living things, all the life happening outdoor in nature, in the garden, in the park, in the forest, in the ocean, wherever it may be, it's all connected. It's all part of the same story of connectedness, of trust, of how we need one another, and ultimately that we are in love with one another, in love with life on planet Earth. This little tiny blue dot in space where we live, suspended in a vast darkness of the universe. And firmly grounded in that feeling that life itself is the foundation of our entire human existence, and at the same time the reason that we're here, of course, it really doesn't need to be any more complicated than that. That's what it's all about. It's why we're here. We're here in service to life on planet Earth. Right, Joey? And speaking of that, life on planet Earth, let's hear what's been happening around the world. Colin Mockett, OAM, is ready with our news bulletin. Colin, we are all ears.
Well, thank you, Mick. After a Danish doggy poem, I feel quite conventional here, even though I'm starting from a very odd, you might think, occasion, because my roundup this week begins in Boston, Massachusetts, where the state capital, Boston, has been taken over by 7,000 Scottish football fans. And they may just be heralding the end of the Trump political era, according to some American political commentators. Here's their logic. Those 7,000 fans, calling themselves the Tartan Army, arrived in style. They reportedly drank the plane dry of beer on their way over. And then they hired 20 school buses to be used during their stay to get them around Massachusetts. In Boston, they've taken over the city centre with a charm offensive like no other. They've bought the Glasgow habit of placing traffic cones on the heads of pompous statues. And most of them aren't staying at hotels, but in Airbnbs in the communities. They all wear kilts. They've got some 50 pipers amongst them who lead them marching through the streets, singing their football songs and chanting. Boston's publicans are absolutely delighted because they're filling the pubs around the clock, singing and dancing. And again, it's all being reported and resonating around America, the takeover of Boston by Scots. Boston, again, reportedly had to bring in shipments of beer from Canada to cope with their thirst. And if they're approached by the police for anything, even when they're found putting coning statues, they simply sing songs to the police and then give them Scottish fan shirts to wear over their uniforms and the police put them on. Their accents are charming everybody, and understandably, they're dominating the news media in America, both the mainstream and social media, which love their chants and their good humour, which underlies everything they do. And several of their chants are anti-Trump, but they're irreverently funny too. So they're succeeding where lots of late-night comedians have failed in America, in getting Americans to laugh at their president. One of their favourite chants, which has been repeated over and over again in the media, goes, "He's orange, he's bald, he prefers them 8 years old, Donald Trump, Donald Trump." Then it's repeated again and again and again. And when it's repeated and picked up by a stadium of 60,000 people and they're all singing the same thing, it goes worldwide publicity. Now, the hard logic of the thing is that Scotland did win its first match against Haiti and they play Morocco next Saturday. And such is the support that they're getting from Americans, they may well progress further in the competition. And who knows, this is sort of taking the thing further. There's a possibility that in 2.5 years, we may be reporting that the Trump era's demise was started by a tartan army of drunken Scots in Boston in 2026. That's the effect that they're having at the moment in America, where it was once MAGA crazy. They're now tartan crazy. And if they carry on this way, they'll carry on, yeah. But now to other news. There seems to be something in the air at the moment because three significant groups are looking to strengthen their climate targets. Maybe it's because we're getting closer to the COP. But let's start with Europe, where this week the European Parliament voted to lift its climate target of reducing net greenhouse gas emissions by 90% compared to 1990 levels. To set that new target, they needed to amend the EU climate laws. And this vote to amend the laws was won by 413 votes to 226, with 12 abstentions. So they almost achieved a 2-to-1 majority. That shows where the issue is seen in Europe. Then in the UK, which no longer considers itself part of Europe, the UK proposed its 7th carbon budget this week, and that's an 87% cut in greenhouse gas emissions by 2038, 2038 to 2042. That's measured against 1990 levels. The standout figure on this paper was that the government has valued peatland restoration and woodland creation at around about £50 billion. That's £50 billion in benefits by 2050. They're re-evaluating the value of their land and why they're working so hard to save it. But then also this week in China, the nation is already exporting climate-saving measures around the world, mostly by the number of solar panels and EVs that they're selling us. But behind this, China is instigating currently its 15th five-year plan, which is a huge document that covers everything from housing and education to manufacturing and defense strategies, all with the aim of, and I'm quoting, making major new progress in building a beautiful China. In the area of climate change, the plan didn't announce any new targets, but instead pledged to peak carbon dioxide emissions before 2030 and achieve carbon neutrality before 2060. Now, inside those figures, it said that China would strive to beat both of those target deadlines with the aim of, quoting again, guaranteeing access to clean air, uncontaminated soil, and safe water for all of its 1.4 billion people. So, they're saying we're not changing our targets. Instead, we're working on reaching them faster. And it was very much for internal consumption, because they're saying that it's all for you, we're doing this. And finally, we tend to think that global leaders in climate action are Scandinavians, because Denmark, Sweden and Finland are always predominant. Sweden's recognised as the closest to net zero, aiming for a full climate neutrality by 2045. But figures released this week show that 8 nations, led by Bhutan and Suriname, are already carbon negative. That's because their forests absorb more greenhouse gases than their small economies emit, which is a status also achieved by Guyana and Gabon. The World Economic Forum, which rates the nations according to their carbon emissions, also listed the small volcanic island of Comoros and then Madagascar, then Niue in the South Pacific, and in South America, Panama, to make up the 8 nations which are carbon neutral at the moment. Panama has a population of 4.5 million people, and around 65% of its landmass is covered with rainforests. That means it didn't take a big effort to achieve net zero. But still, the Panamanian government plans to reforest 50,000 hectares of land by 2050, enhancing its status as a carbon sink. And that shows exactly the correct attitude needed from nations if we're going to negate the threat of global warming. Incidentally, to put it into perspective, if you like, of the 196 UN nations, Australia rates at 182 on that scale, making us 14th from bottom globally for our carbon emissions. But Australia's ranking drops considerably on a per capita base, where we achieve bottom place with emissions regularly exceeding 14 tonnes of CO2 per head of people living in Australia annually. And that sobering figure ends my roundup for the week. I just hope that they're listening to it in Canberra.
Listen to our Sustainable Hour for the future.
Our guest today is Gundula Rhodes, a veterinarian with a special interest in animal and human nutrition that extends to how we actually farm and the negative or positive impacts about how we go about that. She has worked as a vet for 35 years. She has also studied soil science with a pioneer in that field, the late Dr. Elaine Ingham, who's the founder of Soil Food Web. She's also written a book called The Food Solution and runs the Regenerative Vet podcast. So you certainly keep yourself busy, Gundy.
Yeah, I can't help myself. Yes, very true. You know, like I've done a bit, which is a blessing and a curse, you know. Yes, so
I understand. I think we're all nodding to that. Okay, so tell us your story and the influence that have been on your life. Obviously, Dr. Ingham has been one. But yeah, it's not the path that a vet would usually take, the one that you're going down.
Yes, and yet we all should. So my story along those lines probably starts, I grew up in a big city, but always had the love for nature. So I became a veterinarian, studied the science of veterinary medicine. And while I was at university, my mother was diagnosed with breast cancer. So she was probably the instigator who started to ask why. I was 20 years old. I had no idea about food or nutrition. I think nowadays, 20-year-old people would have much more an idea about diet than we would have like 40 years ago. But my mum started, she's a teacher, you know, so relatively inquisitive, started asking, why did I get cancer? So she started to follow whole food philosophy. And so this is when my inquisition into food started 40 years ago. But as a town person and as somebody that is young, you know, mother puts some food on the table. That's what you eat. You don't even ever think about it, you know. And then the 40-year journey as a jack of all trades and a master of none sort of started. So I have been working constantly as a vet for 35 years. And then my life took me to Australia. So I was from Germany, moved to England, learned the ropes, met this Australian guy from a cattle property, and we got married and I moved over to Inverell, and I'm still there until this moment in time. And so his family had an Angus cattle breeding operation. And how life had it, my father-in-law, who was running the whole thing, died relatively early on after I arrived on the scene. And by then I had, you know, like I was pregnant with my second child. And suddenly the boss of the whole enterprise was gone, throwing my then husband and myself into that role of running the farm. And of course, I had not much of an idea, but then, you know, run a few years ahead, you know, like, and I had my own clinic on the farm. The marriage eventually fell apart, and I ended up with this acreage, you know, like a relatively large property with Angus cows and a vet clinic and a few kids to run by myself. And I never ever pretend that I did a good job. You know, like I had no time, I had no money, I didn't have the fencing skills or the skills to repair a four-wheeler motorbike. You know, I would nearly start crying when the lawnmower broke down. However, I was a veterinarian. I was doing cattle work and horse work and sheep work and dogs and cats and, you know, eyes and ears and skin and internal medicine and ruminant nutrition and, you know, dabbling with artificial insemination in horses. Dentistry, horse dentistry, dog dentistry, you know. So we as vets in the country do you know, like we become, I wouldn't say jack of all trades, we are actually maybe masters of a lot, you know, while you can't really, I would not call myself a master in anything, but you get this sort of weird broad picture of how bodies work, you know, and in different animals, you know, from literally from a bird over a snake to a ruminant and a dog and a cat and humans in the middle of that. So life happened that I was on this farm trying to run it. All my bull calves were gone. I didn't have any bulls to sell anymore, just fair enough. So I thought, what else am I going to do with it? And I thought, well, I've always been on the green side of, you know, and, you know, very fond of nature and the environment. That is also a European thing, you know, where in Europe, it's especially in non-England Europe. England has caught up a bit, you know, but like 30 years ago, 20 years ago, you know, like especially Germany or Scandinavia, you know, was much more environmentally aware than, let's say, you know, Australia was. So I decided to convert the farm to organic, a little bit by not having any money to put as fertilizer out anyway. You know, the last check I think I wrote for the farm was super phosphate before I knew, you know, how soil works. And the $70,000 worth of super phosphate poured onto the property. So that was all gone, and I had no money to do it with. So I thought, oh, well, let's do organic. And I learned, you know, so practically I leave a lot to be desired for, you know, like, but I learned about soil and about different grasses and how this whole ecosystem, you know, of grasslands work. Simultaneously, I'm in this little country town of 15,000 people, and there's not much, if you know Inverell, there's not much around, you know, like the next slightly larger city is 90 minutes away, the coast is 4 hours away, so we are relatively isolated, which as a scientific nerdy sort of observer, I observed that the health of the human population was going downhill, which sort of linked it back to my critical view about nutrition since my mother had cancer when I was 20. So suddenly, you know, the people that come into my room in the vet clinic, they all had their own story. So, and people in the vet clinic talk because they don't see you as threatening, you know, like they see a doctor, you know. So you get the stories, you know, of the cancer that the husband has, the heart attacks, the Alzheimer mother, you know, the father with Parkinson's, and then the children with behavioral disorders like autism. So really started to question what is going on. Asthma, you know, like our vintage, you know, like when we were young, we had one child in our class with asthma, and suddenly I'm signing everywhere my sons or my daughter wants to go with school, I have to sign off, you know, that they don't need their EpiPen, you know, and that they're not allergic. And it's just like, what is happening here? So it's this shifting baseline syndrome where we now nearly, or the young people now, think it is normal to have asthma, depression, anxiety, endometriosis, polycystic ovaries. It's normal that we have autistic children, you know, and so the baseline has shifted, but somebody that has lived a few decades, you think, no, this is wrong, you know, like we must acknowledge when it's wrong. So I went on to a journey. Then we are hitting the drought in 2018 and 19, and I still had my farm then, and everything was dying around me. So the climate discussion came into the whole thing as well. So what have we done to the climate? Having been very aware of how climate is changing. And the farmers in my district say, oh, no, we've always had sunspots. You know, it's just a normal natural cycle. And I thought, I don't know. I doubt it. You know, I think this is human behavior induced changes. And I would wake up in the morning, see, like we all went through these bushfires, you know, in 2018 and 19 and very early 20, and thinking, have we humans really done this? You know, so let's assume we have, because we are generally not treating the planet kindly, you know, with our behavior. So let's assume that we're guilty. So then what could we do about that? And then the whole regenerative agriculture, of course, you know, having started with organic farming and then learning about regenerative agriculture, started to, you know, to talk about soil and soil as a carbon sponge, but also Walter Yanni came into the equation. I don't know if you've heard of him. He's a Canberra-based scientist, you know, all about water cycles. So I'm now in regenerate Earth, you know, in the charity. Sort of I'm a part of that, you know, but he and Phil Lee are the main centers, you know, of this organization. So from him, I learned about the water cycles and what that has to do with the soil. So the drought started to me to write a book. While I was writing the book, which is called The Food Solution, I started to ask myself the question about the soil and then what actually happens with modern farming. So then I discovered, so this is, you know, I probably started in 2000 and maybe 15, 16, 17, you know, to really dive into those pesticides that we are using. And when I then discovered what glyphosate did, a lot of things started to click in my brain. And that's when all of these different aspects came together. Yeah, so the declining mental health, the declining physical health, the declining environmental health. I examined and learned what it meant for the soil, compacted soils, dead soils, you know, no fungal mycorrhizal things. Then, you know, the truth about glyphosate is slowly coming out. You know, like, what does this actually do? Since I published my book, Stephanie Seneff had her book out, Toxic Legacy, which just confirmed everything, you know, that I was thinking. And then I started to examine, okay, if this is what it means for the soil, what then does it mean for the food that we're producing? You know, and what does it mean for the climate? And then it all came together. And we might as well even put the economy in there, you know, which is so global now, but we know that the answer to many problems is actually local. So it all got me back to it really, really matters how we farm for the environment, for our health, for the economy, for the survival of ecosystems. You know, it really matters how we farm.
And that's wonderful, Gundi. Look, but you can't leave it there. You've got to take us right the way through before we start discussing the different things that you came out with and the different solutions that you found. Have you still got the farm? How did you change it? And did it work? Or, you know, what happened to you personally before we start talking about the after effects?
To me personally, I ran out of money and energy in 2021, as I had three children to feed and to look after and a vet clinic with 12 employees. You know, I was heading towards burnout and ended up in burnout. So I decided that I was as a one-woman show, I can't do it all. And it really broke my heart. You know, like, I could cry when I think about it, that I had to sell the farm, but I could not keep it, you know. So I sold it, and I, you know, I decided that I would concentrate my efforts onto educating people and getting my, you know, concentrating on my vet work, but also concentrating on nutrition, and that the 1,000 acres that I had left after all of these years, you know, 1,000 acres and debt. You know, it was just too much for me. So I decided to let it go, you know, which was super, super painful, but that's what I did.
Tell me, did the new owners carry on with your ideas or did they go back to more conventional farming?
Conventional farming. Oh. Yeah. I went onto the place 1 week later to pregnancy test some cows, and I saw the Roundup sprays go around, and I literally screamed, and I apologized to the land, and I just could not protect you any longer. But look, it's a huge discussion about how should we farm, you know, and so I am not in the position to say, look at what I did. You know, like, I did this much better than all of you. Not at all. You know, I want to be really humble about this. You know, like, farming is so hard and so tricky and the margins are so low. But I have a lot of contact in the regenerative agriculture field, and I know a lot of the people, and So I was dabbling it, you know, like I got the rotational grazing sort of started. But no, personally, me, failure. You know, like I did not do a good job on the farm. I honestly didn't have the money, the power, you know, to really continue that, you know. So I can only offer, you know, like my knowledge that I learned from being a vet and being a medical person and having had enough insight into farming, you know, that I feel nearly unqualified to talk about it, you know, like, but I think, and I looked at it, you know, like, have I actually got the right to advise anybody on this? And I came to the conclusion there's not many people that know about medicine and the body and the gut microbiome and the neurotransmitters intimately, and also have an idea of how farming actually happens and the consequences that that has.
Yeah, you've been very much part of a lonely path, probably. Once you have the knowledge about how that all interacts, comes a responsibility to have discussions around that. What's that been like for you?
Yeah, I'm always drawn between, I think I know some really worthwhile thoughts and facts that I think the public should know about, and then it seems to be so insulting to the farmers to say, hey, it's all your fault. Do you know what I mean? You know, so I always like to say, I don't want to offend anybody. And the farmers really got hoodwinked into farming the way they do now. You know, like the story of farming after the Second World War, you know, when we had all of these pesticides hanging around from the war machinery, the organophosphates against insects, you know, and the and glyphosate was discovered because it killed things. And then we thought, oh, look, you know, this is a really good idea, you know, and we don't have the shikimate pathway, so we can drink it. You know, it's fine for us. So farming got perverted into thinking, you know, that this is what they can do. And for a while it worked. But then in America, you know, when you look at all the big area of the Midwest, you know, where through the bison, there was this super fertile land created. And within a few years of starting chemical agriculture, they had a dust bowl, they had famines, you know, and they can't grow anything anymore and the whole soil is dead. And the very similar thing happened here in Australia as well. So I feel I'm the connecting link between medicine and farming, and it needs to be heard and it has to be said, because I, you know, in my research, I found, and in veterinary medicine as well, medicine is treating symptoms and nobody is looking where the breakdown of this was. Why? Why do we have an avalanche of all of these diseases? You know, and I think we can really, food is at the center of this and how we grow it. It's not, you know, like we're cottoning on to that there is a link between high sugar or high starch diets and between maybe canola oil and diseases, you know, but this is only the tip of the iceberg, you know, like it really goes more down. The broccoli is not a broccoli anymore. Why? You know, what actually happened? And this is where it's fascinating what I found out there.
Just as the current war between America and Iran has caused a surge in people buying electric vehicles, I understand it's also caused a surge in farmers moving away from artificial phosphates and other chemicals on the farms. And earlier this week, there was a Rachel Ward Australian story about how she changed her Australian farm completely along the lines that you're talking about. But the difference is she completed it. And it helped her mental stability as well. But that's where my next question is for you. Basically, you're now a very changed person. You are a mother who's an author and a vet, and you're no longer running a property, a farm property. But how has your research on the farm altered the way that you live your life now?
Well, I then studied animal nutrition and human nutrition to be more qualified to talk about that. My own whole life, you know, how I nourish myself, what I eat, the food I buy, you know, that's been for a long time, you know, that I try to get local food, you know, organic food, and live what I preach there. So now I have the way I do medicine is different, because now I look for the true etiology rather than prescribing a tablet or an injection. I'm trying to give my knowledge to other people, you know, like, why does a dog have an ear infection? Why does a person have got psoriasis? I guess I treat myself that way, you know, when I have got knee pain, I know, oh, you know, like, I've eaten too much of that, you know, let's check that. And I've started to have a nutrition consultation business as well, you know, where I now consult to people. Because, you know, the what I found is very different from what doctors are even allowed to say. You know, what I am saying, they would actually lose their license if I do. So it's a constant way of trying to educate and to share my knowledge. And when I find something else, you know, to share and to give hope to other people. And do I lose hope often, you know, and then I pick myself up again and say, no, this is too important, you know, because the solutions to our global problems are just here.
Gunde, I would like to introduce you to a Danish farmer who I met just a couple of months ago, and just briefly hear his story out. And then let's discuss a little bit in depth, because I know you have a lot of experience in this field, the topic of PFAS.
PFAS means man-made combination of more than 2,000 different connections of chemicals, and nature cannot break them down. So they end up in the nature, in our bodies, and in the end they will be a cause of sicknesses and other challenges in our health. And I got to know about it a few years ago when the Danish state wanted to make a research on my property, because I'm a coastal farmer and I have grassing nature land along the coast that my cattle grasses. And I thought there was no harm, everything would be fine, but no. The result was that the land was quite polluted and my animals were full of PFAS. So they were put in quarantine for 13 months, and I was totally destroyed with that knowledge. I've been living all my life with organic production, so knowing that actually I had animals polluted and that I, without knowing it, had been selling meat with a pollution that was really destroying my mind. So I started to work with these things, and I have not been to university or anything, so I have another way of getting into things. So I found out where did the pollution come from, and how was the wind, how was the coast, and I made a lot of research and a lot of tests with my animals and with the soil, and that gave me peace in my mind, because I could see it was only certain areas that were polluted, and that I could keep on my production with a good feeling. And then I called in the minister to show him what I had been doing, and he was amazed, and he took it back to the parliament, and I hoped that they would do something immediately, but the world is challenged at the moment, so it was not the first priority. But they gave some millions to further research, and of course that's a step in the right direction. And I hope that very soon they will have a more serious opinion about these things, because it's an ongoing pollution and nobody is really aware how bad it is. In Europe and in many countries, we have put our investments, get our products from China and India and other Asian countries that are polluting heavily without looking at the nature and the environment. So these chemicals will come back to us as a surface pollution floating on the seas. So slowly we get it back to where we live. And actually in 1923 there was a research made on 20 nations measuring PFAS in the bloods of the people, and they found that people in Greenland, that is far away from everything, they had the highest pollution in the blood in the world at that time. And that was really surprising and scaring. And that's because, well, nobody really understood at first. But of course, when they're the last in the food chain, eating icebergs, seals, whales, and very big fishes, that's where the PFAS ends. So of course, they were the ones that got in trouble with that. So if we look like 20 or 30 years ahead, we can see at that time, I guess, a heavy pollution of our oceans. And I think also that the world population will start to decrease, go down maybe drastically, because more and more will not be able to have kids. We will have more and more infertility, and we will have a lot of cancer to fight with, and maybe also new diseases that we don't know about today, because this will have a big influence on our health.
And on our mental health, speaking of yourself, because it's not a good future to look into.
No, it can be a very sad story to look into, a sad future, because many people, they don't know what to do. And sometimes when I make speeches for people, they start to cry and say, what can I say to my kids? And what can we do to change this? But if all of us in the whole world take a little step in the right direction, change our habits, change the way of living, eat the right things, and choose the right clothes and whatever. It's actually the people in the world that have the power to change things. So if we all take a step to the side, it will change a lot. It will have a huge influence. So it's the total power of all people that have to rescue the world. So I can only ask people, do the right thing now.
Danish farmer Jesper Andersen, who owns a farm called Birke Mosegård. It's an organic farm, as he said. So the big question to you, Gundi, is now what can we do?
Oh, so much. we can do so much. I think, like, I would love again to be an organic farmer, you know, like I would just jump in, you know. It's just circumstances just didn't allow me, and hat off to anybody that's an organic farmer. As I like to say, you know, like, once we realize that A, the power is in our hands and everybody's, you know, it's the consumer choices we make. And yes, I might, you know, like Colin, I might not be a farmer anymore now. But what I buy, I can either choose to buy the non-organic egg or the organic egg. 40% of the land mass on Earth is under agriculture. It's a lot, you know, like 40% of it. And how we farm really matters. So if we do organic farming, regenerative farming, whatever label you want to give it, you know, like, so if we work with the soil, you know, like, I spent some time in India, you know, we made a little movie there about natural farming in India. I went to Tanzania, you know, and we started a project there, and I was glad to be part of that. So how do we, the soils nowadays are dead. They're killed by, you know, the chemicals that we put onto them. Glyphosate, Roundup, you know, is an antibiotic. It's an antifungal, it's an antiprotozoal, and an anti-plant chemical. So when we put that, which is what's happening all over the world, on the land, we are killing the soil. So with the soil being dead, we lose the capacity to hold water. So the water is in the atmosphere, you know, like it, making the climate more extreme. The soils that are dead, that are not covered by green land, by green plants, you know, re-radiate heat, you know, with a very ferocious strength, heating up the atmosphere. The carbon that was in the soil is now in the air. So it's not only fossil fuels, but it's like from the soil as well. Simultaneously, all the nutrients, and this is where sort of like my scientific work comes in, you know, all the nutrients that we humans and animals need for our life are all bacterial products. So B vitamins, exclusively bacterial products. Where are the bacteria? They're either in the rumen of a ruminant, but even better, they are in the soil. Who makes all the minerals available to the plants so that the animal or us can eat it? You know, magnesium and zinc for your mental health. It is the bacteria that do that job for us, but we killed them. Yeah, it's a fungal hyphae that bring it from a kilometer away to the plant, and then they deliver it into the plant, and the plant eats the bacteria. The bacteria go up and down the plant like a yo-yo, spitting out their, you know, all of the products that they make. So the whole life is bacterial, and we haven't, bacterial and microbiological, so we have not understood that. So we didn't see the impact that this has, you know. So if you as a consumer choose to buy food from healthy soil, you will get the nutrients that you need. You're bypassing probably the whole of the pharmaceutical industry, which is one of the biggest drivers nowadays, you know, of industry. So the agrochemical, the pharmaceutical, the petrochemical, none of these are very nice intentioned, really. Yeah, so bypass them all. So when we restore soil by regenerative farming, which can be as simple as pushing cows in a rotational grazing system, you know, like from one little strip to the next, to the next, to the next. And within 2-3 years, your organic matter in your soil can have increased, and you're getting biological life and biological nutrient cycles working again. You know, like if I may mention mental health there, you know, like we... there is a bacterium in our gut called Lactobacillus reuteri, which makes oxytocin, which is our feel-good, our bonding, our love and empathy hormone. Nobody has got it anymore nowadays. Why? Preservatives and glyphosate. Because with your daily bread, you're eating glyphosate, which kills your gut microbiome. And there goes, you know, your oxytocin, but there also goes your serotonin. So I think, how many million people, 4 million people in Australia are on psychopharmaca, yeah? So that's a lot of impact that it has. And all of that you can, you just bypass by eating food from your local farmer if you can.
Gundi, you need to say that one more time slowly so everyone gets it, because I think so many of our listeners have this feeling how important it is that we move away from all the aggression and over to a more kind, caring and loving community. So you talked about a hormone.
Yeah.
What was it again? And that hormone, we are in deficit of it?
Yes, we are. We are in deficit of a lot of hormones and a lot of vitamins and a lot of minerals. So let me say this slowly, because this is really important, and this is impacting on every person that does not eat wholesome food that is grown on soil, because you must get these nutrients from somewhere. You don't get them from the water. You don't get them from the air. You must get them from the soil via the plant, and then via either the plant gets eaten by an animal, you know, by a cow, and you eat the beef, or you eat the plant. But you must get these nutrients that are produced by the soil. So let's just do one of them. So tryptophan is an essential amino acid that is a building block of protein, of every protein, but it's also the direct building block of serotonin, which is our happy drug. And most people, 4-5 million in Australia nowadays, are on serotonin uptake inhibitors. So they make these drugs, make that little bit of serotonin that you might have left in your system last longer. It's an antidepressant. And we are dishing it out like lollipops to animals now too. You know, dogs with anxiety and cats with anxiety, and we are giving them the same drugs, yeah? So tryptophan, when I wrote my book, I discovered that tryptophan, I thought, oh, it's in the meat. But then somewhere I stumbled over, oh, it's actually not produced by any mammal. And I thought, cow is a mammal, so who makes it? And so my research found that it is actually exclusively a bacterial product. So therefore, if we spray the whole world with an antibiotic called Roundup, it does really matter. It matters if we grow a tomato in healthy soil or if you grow it on a hydroponic system, you know, where they get water and a few minerals pumped up into them. Tryptophan is missing. So then if you are lucky enough to have enough tryptophan in your diet and you do eat it, then it needs the gut microbiome to convert this tryptophan into serotonin, and then it runs up your body into your brain and makes you happy. Yeah. So I can now give supplements to cats or to dogs, you know, or to humans with tryptophan to give them what we should have had in the first place. So you put that on a global scheme, you have a lot of answers, you know, and this is only one little part of it. You can do the same game with magnesium. You know, if you lack magnesium, like how many people nowadays are on magnesium supplements? You get nervous, anxious, and aggressive if you don't have it, right? Where does it come from? From the soil. Who gets it from the soil into your food system is the bacteria. We killed them. Does it matter? Yes, it does. You do the same with zinc. You do the same with all the B vitamins. I just spent a weekend at the Mind Foundation in Sydney where all the, you know, functional doctors talked about autism and mental health in people. You give those children those supplements that I found out where they actually come from. You know, I mean, I didn't find out. I read it. I got the knowledge together from different, you know, I put the puzzle together. Ah, so if the bacteria make the B vitamin B1, and now this child, this autistic child or this behaviorally challenged child gets B1 and it suddenly gets better. Aha, it was missing. Why was it missing? Because we destroyed the organism that made this in the first place. So the Lactobacillus reuteri that I mentioned before, you can still find it in the Amish people, in people like in the Andes, you know, in remote communities, you would still have this. So when I was at uni, I learned oxytocin is made by the brain. That's it. You know, oxytocin is our letting the milk down hormone. It's a love and empathy hormone. It's a bonding hormone. If women sit together and we're chatting, we have, you know, oxytocin, the mother to the child, you know, couples between each other. It is literally our love and empathy and feel good and purring, you know, like talking cat language, you know, hormone. So then I suddenly discovered and learned, oh my God, oxytocin is upregulated by Lactobacillus reuteri. And then research says we don't have that anymore. Hardly any child in Western societies has got this anymore. Is this significant? I would bet it is, yeah? So now I just learned a recipe how to make yogurt with Lactobacillus reuteri. You could sell that yogurt as the love yogurt, right? You know, but so it's on every corner of our nutrition, you know, we are missing all of these things because we killed the soil. So fix the soil with regenerative agriculture, with inoculants, you know, and without nitrogen fertilizer that comes from Iran, because now we can't get it. And this is where it enters international politics. Yeah, it costs money to get, you know, nitrogen fertilizer. The natural cycles don't need nitrogen fertilizer. We've got bacteria in the ground that do that for us, you know. So life is microbiological. We have got 1 trillion, 10 times as many gut microbiome cells, bacteria in our gut than our own body cells. We are run by those little organisms. Yet we are killing them. Every slice of bread you eat, we are farming now and we are harvesting wheat, for example, or canola. We're spraying Roundup. So we spray that out. So the grain sucks it up. Then the grain dies, so the metabolism stops, and you eat that. So what does that do? You know, like we found research, you eat that bread, that wheat with glyphosate, and your bacteria die and you don't have GABA anymore. GABA, again, is a drug that we give out like lollipops now for against anxiety. It's your calming hormone. So we're really destroying, you know, like the biological basis of all of our lives, you know, with that.
That's how many hormones and chemicals we can squeeze into one sustainable hour. However, Gunde, it sounds to me like you have so much to tell that we need to invite you back for more in-depth details. I love how you connect how we eat and what we do, the choices we make in the supermarket, with the people that we become. That it actually influences our hormones, which influences our behavior. Interesting. Yeah. Now, Gunde, to sum it up, can you give us just a brief advice? And I say, you know, us, the community, the listeners, a brief advice on this topic. And then we would like to ask you one last question before we go.
Yeah, buy local. buy local and buy from farmers. They don't have to be certified organic. They just have to, you ask them, you know, you have a, go to the farmer's market if you are lucky enough to have one. Ask if they spray, if they don't spray, and you can trust that. You know, you can normally get a feeling of you can trust that. Buy your food from those people. And nature with your body will actually heal you anyway, whatever your disease you have. Now that I'm treating also humans, you know, like it's amazing, you know, when you put people on the right sort of diet, high blood pressure is gone, diabetes is gone, the inflamed skin is gone, the depression is gone. It's just so have hope. You can heal anything, but you got to get to the bottom of it. And the bottom of it, just natural food like nature has always done. We've never ever in history of mankind, of life on earth, have we destroyed the basics of our life with some chemicals, you know, which we are doing now. And the PFAS, you know, and the forever chemicals and the plastics and the all of that is on top of that. But my saying is, you can tolerate stress much, much better. You know, you can deal with anything in your personal life. It is a high stress environment now. You know, if you just get given the right ingredients and you can have a brain that is more or less functioning on a calmer manner without popping pills all the time. You know, like, and I can talk. That's why I wrote a book about it. That's why I've got a podcast, because there's so much to say. But the basic is very simple. Go back to nature. Just ask what would we have eaten 12,000 years ago before we started farming?
Repeat for us again. What's the podcast name?
Oh, The Regenerative Vet. So there I have an hour, you know, to talk about, you know, like what does glyphosate do or what does, you know, why is the soil so important? But it's actually very simple, you know, like just go back to nature. So find a local farmer, you know, or grow your own vegetables. And if you eat meat, you know, like eat meat from a grass-fed ruminant, you know, and grass-fed is really important, because when you have a grass-fed animal, I'm lucky, I get my meat from my friend Glenn, you know, and he is a nature lover. So these cows just do not see a chemical. His soil is healed. His water cycle functions. You know, like there's lots of birds and bees on that property, and that meat doesn't do much environmental harm. There'll always be some environmental harm, but we need to eat something. We can't just all give up and commit suicide and die. You know, so if we have to eat something, what is the food that least harms the environment? You know, and then I think grass-fed ruminants are, if done well, you know, are on the top of my list. You know, non-chemicals, they look after themselves, you know, and they're very nourishing. And then from properties like that, you know, so yeah, local, spray-free, organic or grass-fed, grow your own, slow down.
And speaking of bees, Gundi, if you were to boil all this down into one single sentence, what should our listeners be?
Be natural, eat natural food, slow down, calm down, trust. Trust nature. She's got it sorted.
I thought it was going to be quite a lot more demanding.
You pick and eat, it never tastes better.
That's something that I'm so excited by.
When the heat comes, take a stand. Say no to plastic, give the planet a hand. Feel the joy, feel the grace, living like no money to waste. Join the wave, it's taking place, lots of things happening in this space. Zero waste, if you apply the taste of life in a nutshell, when you do it well. Less in the bin, more in your soul. Step by step, we're in control.
Because it tastes so good.
Got my plate and my coffee cup, no single use, I level up. Farmers markets, go by store, support local, and waste no more. Keep this the cool stuff, reusing it style, swap the share, it's all worthwhile. Wash those dishes, ditch the trash, sustainable living, make it a splash.
Human beings need need to get to a point where it's really bad before everybody wakes up and goes, we need to do things differently. And I think that, we're at that point.
Because it tastes so good, because we're just picking it from the garden, we actually don't have to do too much.
You pick and eat, it never tastes better.
Zero waste gives you a better taste of life in a nutshell when we do it well. Less in the bin, more in your soul. Step by step, we're in control. One small step.
There's a real call now to change the way we live, to change what we do, to change the materials that we use. That's something that I'm so excited by.
There's so many different things that we can do. It's like a choose your own adventure book. And there's no better adventure out there than working together to save the planet.